Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast, presented by Capital Area District Libraries.
Welcome back to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined around the mic by Mari Garza.
Hello.
And some of you may already know our new team member from her leadership at our Mason branch and our Holt branches. Welcome our new Cattle Nonfiction Selector, Cheryl Lindemann, who's going to be regular on a podcast.
Yay!
Well, thank you for that wonderful welcome. It's been a pleasure working in this position so far.
3 weeks in, how's it going?
There have been some challenges and a big learning curve, but I'm really enjoying it.
That's great. So how is everybody's summer going so far?
I like to say awesome, except that yesterday it seemed like it was 100 degrees.
There's
like
a lot
really
of
really nice days. I was like, oh, it's so heavenly out here. And then I'm like, wait, how did it get to be so hot again?
But it's good. Okay. All right. So we were talking and looking up and kind of deciding what we wanted to do for a topic for today's podcast. And we seemed to settle on food in all its glory. Food just finds its way into books all over the place. And
yes,
it's just one of those things that brings people together. So what have you guys got? Who wants to start?
Well, I think I can start. I'm
okay.
Going to start with my middle grade books because those are kind of my favorite. I have recently been listening to, all my titles are older this time around, but Granny Torelli Makes Soup. This is by Sharon Creech. And this is such a great story. And I've actually been listening to it, which it's narrated by Donna Murphy, I think. Yeah. And she does such a wonderful job because the grandma is Italian and she's like putting in all these, the Italian accent, zuppa, rosy, you know, and sharing stories about her childhood from Italy. But this is like a super great story about a boy and a girl who live next door to each other. And Rosie's got a pretty intense personality, and her neighbor, pal, friend, Bailey, is a boy who isn't exactly on her level. On her level in that he has a reading disability, or actually a vision disability. But it's just such a cute story. They
okay.
share, and the food part comes in with. It starts out with Rosie's grandma Torelli making a soup, chicken soup for them. And you can just picture all the vegetables and the chopping and the onions and the description of the soup. And there's a really great pasta making scene in the book, which I highly, highly recommend. So, I feel like I often enjoy books more so when I listen to them because I love the voices that people add to them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you'll let me talk about one other one for now that I really, really liked, is called Taco Queen, Stuffed Soto Taco Queen by Jennifer Torres. And the reason I like immediately liked it is because she gives a description of the word orale. Have you ever heard of the word orale in Spanish?
I have not.
So orale is sort of like a yes or okay, yeah, come on, or yeah, let's go. I mean, you kind of have to interpret what the context is when you use that word orale. But I love that word in Spanish because it's like one of these orale, you know, or okay, orale, yeah, you know, it's just, anyway, Steph is a kid whose family owns a taco truck, and she's not too happy about that because she ends up smelling, you know, her family ends up smelling like jalapenos and cooking oil, and she's got this grandmother who often shows up to pick her up at school, and Tia Perla, and it's just, it's about a kid who's wanting to be something other than what she is, and she's wishing that her parents, like, did something more normal other than having a taco truck as their business.
Yeah.
But when the livelihood of the taco truck is threatened, she starts to begin to take more ownership with her
sure.
family's background and, you know, really trying to fight for her family and to stand up and be a part of the community on behalf of her family. So this is a really, really funny book. I could just picture all the scenes with the family members who are sort of annoying sometimes when you're just a kid. let's see, the other one I'll talk about, if I may.
If you want.
Really quickly. is a graphic novel, and this, I'll just describe.
She just wants to get all hers in, just in case.
This is Rutabaga, the Adventure Chef by Eric, I think, Colossal. And I'm not even sure if that's really the author's name, Colossal, and I'm not sure. But this is so funny, and I will just, it's a graphic novel, J graphic novel. I will just describe, like, the opening pages is about this little boy that's running through a field or a jungle, and he gets to a place, and he's like, found you, and you see a big, like, dragon, I think he calls it a dragon sword. Legendary bell top mushrooms are growing on this sword. And then he's got like an invasion of the nearby people who are like, what are you doing? Drop your weapons. And he introduces himself as I am the one and only Rutabaga, the adventure chef. Having grown bored of the standard food offerings available in towns and inns, I now travel the land searching for strange and magical ingredients to add to my
All right,
cookbook.
Fantasy so, chopped, okay.
Yeah, it is so, so funny. It is so funny. And I love kids' graphic novels. They're just, yeah, I highly recommend this one. It's also kind of, yeah, 4 or 5 years old, but you'll find it at the Cattle Collection. Rutabaga, The Adventure Chef by Eric Colossal.
All right, Cheryl, jump in.
Okay. So I was really prepared to talk about some adult titles, but Maddie's enthusiasm has inspired me to talk about a few children's titles
that I had
in the back of my mind. The energy of Maddie's presentation there really inspired me to think about Everybody Loves Bacon and Everybody Loves Cupcake by Kelly DiPuccio. These were favorites at my house and continue to be, even though my daughter's 7. And these are funny, hilarious, lovely, bright illustrations. And Cupcake and Bacon, these are 2 different books, are characters, and everybody loves them. Everybody loves them. And you find out through these books, what happens, and I won't give anything away, but they're delightful stories for children. So very, very fun, very funny as well. Another book that I was thinking of when preparing for this was Paul Fleischman's Seed Folks, mm-hmm. graphic novel, yes. about a community garden. So all different people coming together to create a community garden and their experiences. And it's an older title, but it is one that is really wonderful and really worth going back to.
Okay. All right. So I am going to run into the adult world because the exuberance kind of inspires me to jump on the couple of funny, quirky titles that I came across. Mine come kind of across in 2 themes. I've got sort of off the wall and then more the food bringing people together and bringing people home. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to start with the quirky, weird ones first. One of them is Sourdough by Robin Sloan. Mm. Some of you may remember he wrote Mr. Penumbra's 24-Hour Bookstore, which is still a big favorite in the cattle community. That book is always being checked out still. But this was his follow-up novel, and if you're familiar with Mr. Penumbra's, his style is dry humor, really quirky, a little bit off the wall. Sourdough is a lot off the wall. It focuses on a Silicon Valley programmer who has no life. She's living in this corporate techie community. She basically lives at her job. It's sort of like the stories of Amazon and their campus. You know, you eat on campus. There's places to work out on campus. It's that kind of setup. And they're always trying to tweak things to make it, to improve the workers, which is kind of scary and weird. It includes foods, changing the food, so it's high energy and high nutritious and really horrible. But she's doing her job, she's sticking with it. She's actually weirdly from Michigan, just as a side note. But she's resettled in San Francisco in this community, and she has no life because she's basically living at work. One day she gets home, she doesn't want to deal with anything, doesn't want to deal with the... All I can think is goop. I can't remember quite what they called the stuff that they gave the employees to eat. She has it at home, she doesn't want it, she's looking for something else. There's this flyer on the wall of her apartment complex for a new restaurant. So she's going to do takeout from this restaurant. And it's just... She's getting a sandwich, she starts going to this getting deliveries from this restaurant. It's the shadiest thing on the planet. They show up on a bike and give her stuff, and she pays for it, and but it's so good, and the sourdough bread is like to die for. Well, this goes on for quite a while, and she becomes basically their number one eater. There, it's sort of the impression of like a Slovakian, somewhere, you know, somewhere in that kind of Eastern European area, these two pair of brothers have come and are in the country. They're kind of under the radar with working out of somebody's apartment and have visa troubles. So on their way out of the country, they give her their sourdough starter and give her all kinds of instructions about what to feed it. She should play music for it, and then she needs to learn to bake. So she starts, and this is magical sourdough, and it's everybody loves it. It just weird things happen with it. You do have to be very it almost felt like a if you remember kind of the strange things you had to do. It's one of those things where if you don't follow the rules, the sourdough might start doing things it shouldn't be doing. But it's just a send up on foodies and foodie culture. It's a send up on the tech community. It's smart and just really, really strange. There is a point where the sourdough could be on the verge of taking over San Francisco, but it doesn't. It's all good. but it was just a really funny book. But it is a sort of a dry sense of humor, but also a lot of just insane stuff happening in it.
So the sourdough is a character.
The sourdough is a character, and the sourdough has particular music tastes, and the sourdough can form up bread, and sometimes the bread has faces baked in. Sometimes the bread, it's just a weird, weird book, and it was fabulous. So if you liked Mr. Penumbra's, I would certainly hunt that one down. The other one, and this is... You may find this a little odd, but this is weirder. This one is in our, it's either in sci-fi or horror. I actually can't remember. Actually, it must be in sci-fi. It's urban fantasy. It is a novella called Envy of Angels by Matt Wallace. It's the first of seven books, seven novellas. And it starts off, it's the New York restaurant scene. You have a couple of chefs they're out of work, kind of out of chances. They're really good, but they haven't been able to deal kind of back down to really horrible chefs, people who have treated them horribly, or head chefs that have treated them horribly. They get a call from a former culinary star offering a job at his catering company, Cine du Jour. They have no idea what they're getting into. It turns out, evidently, the paranormal residents of New York City have their own underground food culture. And as they are settling in and trying to understand what they're seeing, because there are goblins, demons, every other thing, looking for catering options. Their first major assignment ends up being to help catering a meal between two rival demon gangs, groups, rival families, who have requested angel on the menu. And that's a little farther than anybody is prepared to go. They aren't actually quite into the idea of trying to find and cook up an angel. So they have to figure out a backup plan, or they'll be hell to pay. We're talking angels and demons here. It's a very strange, weird, funny romp. You've got the chefs, you've got the servers have their own little community within this company. You've got procurers who are hunting down these essential ingredients who are more like special forces type people. You have industrial espionage. When they finally figure out what they might be able to substitute Angel for, they end up having to infiltrate a restaurant corporation to figure out their recipe so that they can match it.
Applebee's.
Think more along the lines of Chicken McNuggets.
Okay.
There is something weird tasting about them. It's off the wall. It's really bizarre. If you like sci-fi and horror, it's just one of those. It's a lovely mashup of that. And again, it totally pokes up the restaurant culture and foodie culture. And they're insane, but they really are fabulous. And each one is sort of related to the seven deadly sins. So the first book is Envy. The next one is Less Love Lizards? I'm not getting that right, but it's just it plays through the seven deadly sins with each of these titles, and they're just really interesting books. So who wants to go next?
Wow, I'm going to go in a totally different direction.
Well, of course you are. I am just here to throw everybody off in one direction. Yes, go for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking a lot about food memoirs and how many wonderful memoirs there are. And my current read is a food memoir by a very prolific food writer, Save Me the Plums by Ruth Reichel. And in Save Me the Plums, this is the story of Ruth taking over as editor of Gourmet magazine. And she was a food critic, a restaurant critic, a food writer, and becoming the editor of Gourmet was a very big change. And she gives the history of Gourmet, which was a magazine that she fell in love with as an eight-year-old child. And the history of Gourmet is actually very interesting. Ray Bradbury's Dandelion Wine was first published in Gourmet magazine. Hmm. Annie Proulx was a writer for Gourmet magazine. The poet laureate of Maine was a writer for Gourmet magazine. And he had an article about lobsters that Ruth Reichel read as an eight-year-old child, and that's what actually drew her to Gourmet. But by the 90s, Gourmet had changed and had become really a lifestyle magazine for people with a lot of resources. Right. And Ruth saw that this literary, artful magazine had changed.
Right.
And she was brought on board, and Save Me the Plums is that story of her work-life balance, of becoming a manager of a very large team of people, and it is one of a series of memoirs by Ruth that go all the way back to Tender at the Bone, which starts with her childhood in food. And it's really a pleasure to read Ruth's books, because you can see as she goes through her life, she's written enough books that you can see her at different phases of her life and in different positions that she held. Garlic and Sapphires is one of her books about specifically being a restaurant critic, and it's just rich with storytelling about different restaurants, about famous people in the food world. Comfort Me with Apples is a little bit more of a personal memoir that goes back. My Kitchen Year is the book that precedes Save Me with Plums, and this one is My Kitchen Year, 136 Recipes That Saved My Life, and this book actually is the tale of what happened when Gourmet folded a couple of years ago, and what happened to Ruth's life. She went from being in this high-pressure job to losing that job, and actually it was food that brought her back from really despair after losing her job, and it's filled with recipes, which are really wonderful. So Ruth Reichel's writing, it just draws you in. It absolutely pulls you in. Whatever story she's telling is gripping, it's funny, it's poignant, it's honest, and she's really an inspiration. So it's been a pleasure to be able to read all of her books and follow her as an author like that. And this book does not, Save Me, The Plums does not disappoint at all. A few other books that I want to mention, not quite as into the fantasy realm as the title that Jessica mentioned, but some magical realism titles, sort of light magical realism, the works of Sarah Addison Allen, several of those, including Garden Spells, The Sugar Queen, books where food is not so much of a character as it is in Sourdough, but it plays a role in this sort of magical, light magical sense. Another one that I read recently, which is actually by a cookbook author, is The Memory of Lemon. It's a sequel to The Cake Therapist. And these are stories of a baker who is sort of pulling her life together after some personal challenges, and she has a sense with food. She's a wedding planner. She does cakes for weddings, but she can sense something about people after sitting down with them, and she can actually sense a flavor, and that helps her with the wedding planning, and it's sort of a bit of a almost magical sense that she has with people. So those are some really enjoyable books that sort of cross a little bit into fantasy, but stay in the general fiction category as well.
Mm-hmm. That sounds really interesting, that Lemon book. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to jump into just a couple of J.E. Picture books. Many of you, probably, if you have little kids, you are often looking for, when I say little kids, I mean like the under two crowd, maybe under three crowd, for what we call concept books. And these are books that might focus very generally on ABCs or 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And I've picked a couple of books along those lines or that fall under that category. And they were notable to me because at the very end of each book, there's a beautiful, like a big family at the table sort of spread. So the first one is called Feast for Ten. It's by Catherine Falwell. And it is just beautiful in that it features just what it's like to go through, you know, the family day of going to the grocery store, of having the pumpkins that you're buying, the chickens to fry, and it goes through every family member. So it's a counting book that goes all the way to nine, but then it goes backwards too, and it goes back to one, two, three, four. It goes back and forth, and at the very end, you've got 10 hungry folks to share the meal. And I guess for me, one of the reasons I really liked it is because it features an African-American family with really colorful food. I really like just the spread and the generations that are
at the table
in the family. Mm-hmm. I don't have a family, I didn't grow up, or nor I have a family now where both parents, grandparents, or even aunts or cousins are ever really involved so much. And I just really like this book a lot. So this is Feast for Ten by Catherine Falwell.
Very
and
cool.
Then the other one that is sort of along the same lines is maybe one you've already heard of. Today is Monday. Pictures by Eric Carle. And it's based on a children's song, which at the end there are musical notes and the words to the song. But Eric Carle has written so much. I mean, or has put together so much, produced so much, over 40 books. And I have not read them all, but I want to read all of them, and I want to make each one of them notable in my head. Because the collage work, it's just gorgeous. It's again a very repeating book, and this one kind of reminded me, like, have you ever played the, is it called the Going on a Picnic game?
Yes. Yep.
You know, where you kind of have to remember. Mm-hmm. So he starts out with, you know, today is Monday, string beans, and then Tuesday, spaghetti, Monday, string beans, Wednesday, zoop, Tuesday, spaghetti, Monday, string beans.
Yep. Like, yes. Yep.
All these things. And it's he goes backwards too in this one. So these are two concept books I really, really enjoyed. The third book I'm going to talk about, which I hadn't read in quite a while, thank you, Miss Cheryl, for bringing it up, is Mama Panya's Pancakes, A Village Tale from Kenya. And this is by Mary and Rich Chamberlain, and it's illustrated by Julia Carnes. This is a village story. It's about a mom and her son who are on their way into their village town, I guess you could say, to purchase the ingredients to make pancakes. And on the way, the little boy is inviting everyone he sees, like all their old friends. And the mom is getting kind of like, I don't know if you know, you should do that. And the thing that they say quite a bit is a little bit and a little bit more. So they get, the mom, like, is trying to, like, hold him back as he reaches all of his friends. One's at a pond, one's just on the road. But what's really nice is at the end of the story, when all the friends that they've run into come, they all bring something to sort of help in sharing the meal. Someone brings, like, she's able to buy just a small bit of flour for their pancake evening of making dinner, and she's kind of concerned that she's not going to have enough to make for everyone. Well, someone brings extra flour, and it turns out she does have enough flour to make the pancakes. But a lot of these books that I'm talking about today have recipes in them, and this is also one of them where you'll find a recipe for what could be considered Kenyan pancakes. And I also like that at the end, a lot of books will feature like a little mini nonfiction section about there were facts about Kenya in here. There was that recipe for Mama Panya's pancakes. There's a suggestion that pancakes, you know, are represented in every culture, like tortillas maybe. They're not always, you know, the same, but you've got, I can't think of the Indian bread that I'm thinking of, but yeah, just a description of all the different types of breads that people use to roll things in. And it turns out with the, at least Mama Panya's pancakes, you can make them either savory or put jam inside and make them sweet. So this is really, really beautiful. Beautiful book. And that's it for now.
Let's just balance out. So we talked... That one is a good example of community building.
Yes.
And we've had some other ones we've talked about.
Yes. I like, know when you're thinking about that, it's like off my, off in my brain in the field somewhere in there. But it's it was a really nice book last year. We've talked about it a few times, actually. And I wish I could
because it was
we'll put it in the link, but it's about a woman in New York City who's all the neighbors are like, oh my gosh, her stew smells so good.
Yes.
And I don't even know if they, I don't remember right now if they asked for some, but she decides
it's Thank
to give
You, Amo.
Some. Yeah.
It's Thank You, Amo is the book. Mm-hmm. And it was an award nominee or winner. I can't remember nominee, I think. But again, we've got, pardon me for a sec. Okay, so there are that building of community or, food is home. That sort of concept is so popular
sharing.
In books. Yes, and sharing.
Sharing. Yeah.
One of the books, and I was telling you both, I have no stopping power. I picked up a book thinking, oh, this would have been a good one to actually read for this podcast, and I picked it up last night, and I started it, and I couldn't stop. So there's a really good new book called Natalie Tan's Book of Luck and Fortune by Roselle Lim. And Cheryl, this actually jumps right off from, it's that little bit of magic, but it's just, it's not overwhelming, it's not a fantasy book, but it's a book about, is a woman, a young woman who hasn't spoken to her mother in 7 years. They fought over what she had a dream of becoming a chef. She wanted to go to culinary school. They were fighting so badly that she moved out. She was going to do this all on her own, but she actually flunked out of culinary school. Just the stress got to her. But she was so determined that she wasn't going to go home. And they talked a little bit, but it always kind of came back to the arguments. So in the opening of the book, she's at home. And the windows are open, and she hears the birds in the area, and suddenly she's hearing her mother's song, and she knows she's missed her chance. She's actually on the way to the airport when somebody calls to tell her that her mother has died. So she goes back home to San Francisco, to Chinatown, and she's, you know, going to set things in order. She doesn't actually have a real plan for her life at this moment. She's sort of in between jobs. She's been wandering the world trying different things and working in restaurants. She's learned a huge amount about the communities she's worked in and their culinary, their dishes. And she's, you know, she can make dishes of her own, and she is a great cook. But she's going home and she's sort of trying to figure out her mother after the fact, and the community that she never really understood. But it's gone downhill over the years, and a lot of people blame that on the fact that after her grandmother had died, her mother didn't take over the restaurant that's in that first level of their building. And she wants to do that, and her mother even leaves her a note saying, I'm sorry I stood in your way. This is here for you if you want to do it. So it's her trying to figure out if she can start a restaurant, because, you know, restaurants fail very quickly. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, is it something, will people come? Does she know how to cook well enough? But she just decides she's got to try. And as she's sort of practicing her dishes, the smell goes out into the community. And every time she makes something, somebody shows up at the doorway. And somebody wants to try something. And early on, one of her mother's friends takes her aside. And she's a seer of sorts. And there's a lot of superstition and stories within this little Chinese community. And she's, you know, she gives her a gift from her mother, which happens to be her grandmother's cookbook. And she tells her that there are sort of prophecies that she's got to help three people and solve two problems before. But once she does, the restaurant will be perfectly fine. It will be lovely, and it will bring back the entire community. And she doesn't understand until she opens up her grandmother's recipe book, which is sort of, in the sense of the cake therapist, it's the recipe, but it also has a little note about, give this to somebody who needs a little courage. I use this with this person, and this is how it worked. Mm-hmm. You know, or give this to a couple that people come to me about love, but that's not something I really want to get in the middle of. But if they need, you know, sometimes they need something for listening. This will help them kind of slow down and actually listen to the people, you know, in whatever the relationship is. So it's those types of little prescriptions throughout the cookbook, and she tries, and it doesn't go quite the way it should to begin with. And there's a few things she's got to figure out, but it's such a neat book about bringing the community back together and not holding on desperately to the past, but letting things go as they need to go. So there are people throughout all of this. She's sort of, in a way, it's a little campy in that there's a developer who keeps coming through and trying to buy all the buildings they want to, you know. They want to, you know, office space and that sort of stuff. And so, you know, they're after the bookshop. They want the pharmacy. They want the restaurant space. They want whatever they can get a hold of to sell it. And, you know, but this is the time you're going to make lots of money. And there are people that are tempted, but there are also people who just sort of they don't need to be doing this anymore. But slowing them down to say, okay, if you don't want to do this anymore, can we at least find somebody who's going to support the community instead of, you know, the evil developers who are just going to kind of it won't be Chinatown anymore. So it's a really fun, nice book in that sense. There's just a little bit of romance. There's a lot of humor, and just a lot of great food description as you go through too. And it's not just Chinese food. She's been to a number of different places. So there's, you know, Filipino food, and somebody takes her to a fabulous taco truck, and it's just there's a lot of appreciation for food throughout.
Oh, sounds very good.
And there's one other one, sort of also jumping off from what you were saying, Cheryl, that I had sort of forgotten about, but I really enjoyed. For fans of Ruth Reichel, but also fans of Oliver Sacks, is a book called Stir, My Broken Brain and the Meals That Brought Me Home, mm-hmm. by Jessica Fetcher. Mm-hmm. Jessica was a food blogger. Top of the world, Harvard grad, newly married, looking to start a family. She went to an academic conference, went out for a run, and had a brain aneurysm. So multiple surgeries. She's for a while, she lost her sense of smell. She lost some sight. But once she was strong enough, she went into the kitchen. It was her, again, it's sort of finding your way home. It was the thing, it was important to her. It was always, always important to her to be in the kitchen. So as soon as she was able, she would at least get to the table, get over a stove top and stir something. And she, you know, stirring, kneading, salting, sifting, it all had something to help her find her way back to herself. And not everything could be fixed, but learning to kind of accept what's broken and go forward from there. It's a really interesting memoir of kind of recovery and the power of food.
Sounds great. On the topic of memoirs, mm-hmm. and also on the topic of mother-daughter relationships, I don't know if you have both. I'm sure we've all read books where you have, there are certain passages that bring an image, and that image sticks with you long after you've read the book.
Definitely.
And one such book for me is Blood, Bones, Butter, The Inadvertent Education of a Reluctant Chef by Gabrielle Hamilton, who actually has a new memoir coming out later this year,
okay.
from what I've heard. And this book goes back to the chef's childhood, and that's the part that's the most poignant. There's a very strong mother-daughter relationship in the beginning of the book that is that ends up being a bit broken, and then the rest of the book chronicles Gabrielle Hamilton's career as a chef and what happens after that. But those images of being around the table, she had a French mother who cooked French food, they had elaborate dinner parties, and that relationship she had with her mother around that table absolutely stick with you. That memoir is excellent.
I'm just going to mention one teen book, or YA book. It's called North of Happy. It's by Adi Al-Sayed, I think, if I'm saying his name correctly. And this is definitely an author to look out for. He has been compared a little bit to John Green. He writes really, really great romances, if you're into YA romances. And this particular story is about a boy named Carlos Portillo. He's kind of led, I guess you could say, a privileged life in Mexico City, which, by the way, is where Adi Al-Sayed is from, or where he grew up. Mm-hmm. And in the story, Carlos has a dual citizen of the U.S. and Mexico. And he has definitely tried to, you know, walk the straight line, be, you know, someone his parents are proud of, and he's kind of following the line his parents have for him. But he secretly really wants to be a chef. He really wants to kind of nurture and explore more so his interest in cooking and food. And he has a brother who is tragically killed in a way. And this is the story of him just deciding to chuck it all, and he goes off to the United States and somehow lands a job with his one of his favorite celebrity chefs. And there's I think the daughter of the chef that becomes a romantic interest. It's really a great story. And I'm kind of interested in this because I'm like noticing more and more books about kids interested in being chefs. We talked about Fire and High last month. Someone who wants to be a chef there. My brother is a chef, so I am also really interested in this sort of career path, because I think growing up I never would have thought that you could, I mean, I thought you were a cook and you were a cook, and you know, just like, no, there's a lot more to it now that I'm an adult.
There seems to be so much interest. I really am not a reality show person, but I have stopped on like the kids' versions of Chopped and MasterChef, and I am just wholly impressed and shocked by what some of these children can do and really want out of their lives at such a young age.
Exactly.
So it's
food alive in a way that I wouldn't have thought of.
Actually, there's a really good children's DVD that's in our collection called Grace Stirs It Up. It's actually an American Girl DVD, and that is basically the storyline, and it's really fantastic. She ends up being able to go to Paris and help out with a relative's food, you know, restaurant business there, and it's really well done and really inspiring for kids who like to cook or bake or that sort of thing.
No, I mean, food is such an integral part of everybody's lives, it's really neat to see where books and movies and take it and use it, and it's such a central thing in so many stories.
Have any of you had the problem where you're reading and you're just craving way too many baked goods from reading a book series?
Okay, so bizarrely, we were talking about this last week, something you read. Inspired you to snack on something. At the same time, I'm thinking in the back of my head, I was reading a romance, but the character, it's just sort of a side note to the story, but this guy has sort of been adopted by another family, and the first time he meets this grandmother, she pulls out a sandwich. It's her special egg salad recipe, and he becomes addicted. Yeah. And this is just a flash of his childhood, but years later, his partner is saying, "What foods do I need to know?" He needs egg salad, but it needs to be grandma's recipe, so you know.
I think like 2 or 3 years ago, I read a Lisa Wingate book that was, I think, something about a box, a thank you box or the shadow box or something. And they refer to, it's set in the South, and I want to say in Louisiana maybe, but beignets, I've been thinking about beignets for like 3 years. And when am I going to like really taste an authentic one? I really want to try one. Yeah. So yeah, it's really interesting how, you're right, when you could be reading and it kind of like...
Or even, you know, people talk about something, I'm thinking, oh, maybe I need to go over to Swagath for lunch, because they're talking way too much about curry in this book, and I just need that now.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So, yeah. The book that I was mentioning actually was The Wild Horses of the Summer Sun. It's my favorite read from the summer so far. Tori Bilski is the author. It's a memoir of Iceland. And the point is not the food, but the food really stood out to me as part of the atmosphere, as really part of the setting and part of the experience for this group of women who go to Iceland for 12 years in a row to have a trip together, to ride Icelandic horses. And It's just a wonderful memoir. I highly recommend it.
Well, this has been a great topic, and I know we can go on forever. And none of us mentioned a cookbook in all of this either. I mean,
a lot of these books that I've talked about do have recipes in them.
Yes,
check them out.
But I mean, if we just started down the whole road of cookbooks, we'd be here for another couple of days. So, let's close on something different. What are you guys reading now, or what are you looking forward to reading?
I'm reading, I want to say it's called The City of Broken Angels. It's by Luis Urrea. And I'm reading it because I'm going to Tijuana next week, and I'm just wanting to get in the mood. So.
Sure, yeah, that makes sense.
Tijuana, Mexico.
I've actually been inspired with this topic to read some more food writing that I have not read. One book that I have on hold right now is Kitchen Yarns, Notes of Love, Life, and Food by Anne Hood. Also a food memoir. Very much looking forward to that one.
How about you?
I think I'm going to leave food for, well, overtly food for a little while. I'm working through, I think the next book I want to pick up is, I have an advanced reading copy of a book by a popular author here at Kettle that doesn't come out until November. And I'm a little afraid to tell you about it right now. But if you liked The Night Circus by Erin Morgenstern, she has a new book coming out, and I'm really looking forward to it. So that's where I'm going next, I think. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.